life, table,
dignity,
security,
freedom,
respect, justice,
equality,
equality,
remedy,
protection,
fairness,
fair time,
right,
world,
peace,
illusions,
new,
meant.
This is my mistake, let me make it good. I raise the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum,
identity,
family,
home,
conscience,
expression,
participation,
democracy,
welfare,
work,
leisure,
health,
education,
focus,
culture,
human rights,
Charter Dana,
solid,
fill in the mortar. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good day to our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a global collection of musicians. I'm Jim Hutchings with Brian Brocheza and our special guest host, Derek Cornett, from the U of R J School program. Derek will be talking with Misty Longman, Aboriginal Student Center Manager, and Adam Martin, a fine arts student at FNUC. Welcome, everyone.
Hello, I'd like to join you guys. Thank you for coming on the program today. So the idea I got to do the program today on Aboriginal education was the fact that the Saskatchewan Party addressed in their one of the reports, Saskatchewan 2020 and Beyond, that they wanted to bridge the gap between Aboriginal students who are graduating high school and increase that by 20%. So, Adam, I understand you're not originally from Saskatchewan. Could you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
I came to Saskatchewan in 2005 from Six Nations, Ontario, and I actually dropped out of university myself in 2010, so I'm not currently a student anymore. I'm also working at the McKenzie Gallery in the Urban Outreach Program right now. So we actually are using visual arts to also address these issues to keep mainly, I suppose, the high school kids. They're the target audience, and keeping them in school and interested.
So what were you studying when you were in university?
I was at FNU. It was the Indian Fine Arts. And I did a stint at McMaster previous to that. And, a lot of the issues tied in together, I suppose, into my leaving but each mm-hmm. school. But, yeah.
All right, so what are some of the issues that you think Aboriginal people on and off reserve have when it comes to pursuing education and reaching their goals?
I think there's, that's a where to begin kind of situation, right?
Yes.
There's so many things, travel for one, and accommodations. There's also an age difference on average. Like if you take FNU, for instance, I'm pretty sure the average student is in their mid-20s, early 20s.
The average medium age of FNU NIV students is 28.
Yeah, for the most part, they're going to have families.
Yeah,
they may be single parents, or they may be alternating on who's working and who's going to school. So And even if they are in town, you get into different scenarios as to what it would be that would keep them in school or keep them from going.
I think you also have to take a look at the challenges before you even get to that point. You have to think about the socioeconomical differences between our First Nations people, and specifically in Saskatchewan, versus non-First Nations people. You also need to think about the federal schools and their curriculums and the lack of consistency that goes around, too. So those challenges that this First Nations students in our area specifically face start well before they even think about the idea of attending a post-secondary institution.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that has been an overwhelming reason why maybe students drop out of high school or don't pursue a post-secondary education?
Absolutely.
And I think in high school it's primarily not addressed. I know that there's been a push in Saskatchewan to have treaty knowledge and cultural perspectives pushed in the curriculum, but I think, like, as that's just happening now, we're not going to see that for at least another couple of, at least another generation of these teachers, educators that are coming through the system. And for me, leaving McMaster, a factor there was there was no representation in the programming. I took an early Canadian art history course, thinking I would get some of that First Nations art component in there, and all it was 15 minutes of a 3-hour course throughout, and that was it for the whole semester. Other than that, there was an Indigenous Studies. And then at FNU, I met my wife and we had children, and that was another big factor as well. I ended up being the one to stay home, and she carried mm-hmm. on and finished in social work. And, of course, issues of politics and such come into play. Also, there's so many angles. And this is where funding can come in as a gamble, too. You're not absolutely assured funding from your band, from the government. I know that there's a stereotype out there that Indians and First Nations people are getting a free ride, but it's just not the case. The political environment changes on reserves, so don't the staff changes as well, and these become factors in people's day-to-day.
Why do you think there's a preconceived idea that Aboriginal people are getting this big extra financial push?
Well, I guess because it is sort of, it's just another stereotype. I mean, it's something that's available there. It's a government. It's a right in a lot of people's minds. It's true for the most part. But a lot of people just aren't aware. There's big separations. People will rely on what they hear and what they think they know, but this stuff isn't written in the books. There's a lot of it sugarcoated, a lot of it's romanticized, a lot of it's not even talked about or mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very touchy subject, and it keeps people shy. Other than that, people got their own problems and their own, from their own backgrounds. They got their own issues and concerns. So what's happening to the Indians? It's not really my concern if I'm an underemployed non-native working in a city who wants to go into a trade, right? Mm-hmm. Who cares? So
I think they call it the PSSP, the Post-Secondary Student Success Program, through INAC, that supports status Indians with treaty. I guess so would be a treaty Indian more specifically, and Inuit students. And there's so many, yes, it's a right, and that's what we've all established as treaty people in our area, but the case is the way the funding works is you're not mandatory as a band to allot that money specifically to students. You can allocate those funds. There's no auditing processes. There's no transparency. There's no accountability. Then Adam's mentioned more than once already the politics that get involved in that too. So bands work on a block funding system, and they have wait lists, and they allocate money, and there's a 2% cap every year that just doesn't reflect our growth as people, as an economy, and everything like that. So there's so many barriers that we do face, even though people think that there's this conception, there's that single story that Indians get free education, and it's not necessarily the case. In 2008, 2009, we had 10,000 Aboriginal students in Canada who didn't actually get this this right or this option to even choose to go into post-secondary institutions.
So what do you think about this 2% cap that you just brought up? Is this something that should probably be addressed somehow? Or?
Yes, I think many people have tried very hard in the past while to address this issue. The students had a rally, an education action rally back in February, and this is something AFN has spoken about. There's been educators and lawyers and people writing policies and ideas and suggestions on how to change this process and how to address the issues and the needs and express these concerns for a number of years now, I think, because this has been, the block funding process has been in place since 1977.
Oh, okay. And so, it hasn't moved since then?
No.
That's a long time.
Yes.
So outside of school, what type of support structures are available for Aboriginal students?
You should answer that one. You're outside of school.
Yeah.
I'm inside.
Like, I'm sure your family obviously has a large part in motivating you to go to school.
Well, yeah, there is. Yeah, for the most part, it was there. For me, my uncle helped me out. He actually contracted me to do a mural before I came out to Saskatchewan. So I came out here with a large chunk of change, and I was thinking, why am I going to school when I should be doing this? If I could do a mural once a month, why would I need to go to school, right?
Mm-hmm.
But something like that never came up again. And so that was a way that a member of the family helped me. And also, you know, just being there. I'm 1,000 miles away from home, but I've always had supports. I suppose, I thought I had a more better answer than that.
Well,
or something more to add.
I think there are supports, but they're not as many as people would think. I'm very fortunate in the fact that I come from a family of educators. My mother has her master's. My dad has his two undergrad degrees, and education was very predominant discussions in my home, and it wasn't a matter of if you go, it was when you go. And it wasn't a matter of when you go to this place, it was when you graduate high school and go to First Nations University of Canada. Like, there was no choice for me, right? And that's not the case for everybody, and mm-hmm. that's especially not the case for a lot of students, Aboriginal students, First Nations students across our area and our country. We don't have those supports necessarily that people have in different economic backgrounds and cultures and communities.
Yeah, for sure. So, Adam, have you encountered any specific obstacles in your own time as an Aboriginal student?
Yes, many.
I think that.
Yeah. Being Mohawk and coming from Six Nations, moving to Saskatchewan, I was here for about 3 months before I realized I was going through a large culture shock. Excuse me. Up until that point, I assumed that Indians were Indians, and then I come out here, and then there's this, all of a sudden, everyone's treaty Indians, and which I'm not, I'm a status, which leaves me entitled to all of the same rights and everything under the Indian Act. So the Indian Act doesn't discriminate who's treaty and who's not, we're all status. And so right there's different opinions on relationships with the government and historical perspectives, and also just challenging and asking questions and analyzing and challenging. These are things that they're taught in university. But when it came to addressing issues as they came up within the university's operations, you know, there was a lot of challenges that I met there. And then I guess with that said, it was harder, a little more harder to find support because FNU has elders on site. And again, I was able to go and talk with them and make friends with them and relate to them. But their knowledge background was something that was different from mine.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like, I'm not a traditional person. I didn't grow up in a traditional environment back home. And I do have some things that I listened to growing up in elementary school. And so I do have a bit of knowledge. But I always felt like I was going to, you know, like a different master in a different sort of kung fu, I guess, to put it in one way. You know, it was
you're a grasshopper.
Facing that sort of adversity inside the school, being outside of the community, having these different opinions, were always challenged. And but otherwise, I think I made my way pretty good without too much, you know, racial discrimination, I suppose, other than the Indians in Saskatchewan.
Okay. Which is the biggest issue for any Indian in Saskatchewan.
I think so, yeah. It's great, though. I think there's a lot of strength there, right, as well.
Mm-hmm. So these opportunities, you said that you've had access to elders and stuff like that. Well, since you've been here, does this sort of thing, is that available in Ontario? Or?
Well, the McMaster, I didn't really see it much. There was an Indian or Indigenous Studies and Native Studies component, and the Native group, you know, this sort of extracurricular group would sort of meet there, and it was a handful of students. Otherwise, the reserve was just a 20-minute drive away.
Okay.
And so I was there to get education. I was there to learn. I was sort of just ready to go, and the difference is, like, McMaster at that time had about 60,000 students, I think, full-time, which is huge compared to the 12,000 at the U of R.
13
now.
It's new.
Yeah, and now, and you see, when I came into the FNU, I really found that there was no barriers at all, because if you're motivated enough, you can get anywhere inside that school. The classes are smaller.
Mm-hmm.
I was going into fine arts for those 4 or 5 years that I was there. I was probably the only Indian fine arts major. So when it came to going to school and, like, all of a sudden the studios are closed, they're locked, I approached the department head, and I said, can I have a key? He said, well, why don't we just hire you? You know, so all of a sudden I had jobs available to me, because I was the only one, you know, willing to look and go in there. I wasn't the only one in the entire faculty, the student. You know, there's the early classes, the first and second level classes, they really fill up. Like, they average 30, 40 students a semester.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but again, I was the only fine arts major. And being motivated, being in there, and realizing the opportunities, I mean, that's something that's really internal. And it is what you make of it when you're in post-secondary.
So, do you have any advice for students who are currently going to school, like how you've been able to manage or overcome these kind of obstacles?
Yeah, well, like working with some kids at various high schools in the urban outreach at McKenzie, they're, you know, I would just say, just stick with it, you know? Like, a lot's going on in your teenage years, but if you have some goals, you know, it's really what university is about, is networking. And once you get your foot in the door in university, whether you're there for a year, for 2 years or 9 years, you know, you make what you can of it. You're building bridges that's going to move you, that's going to always be, you're always going to be crossing into the future long after you graduate, or you don't graduate, or you take some time off and you come back. You know, it's this whole stereotype, I guess, and this thing that they push at FNU as well, I guess, is like, if you're First Nations, you got to be a leader. You got to be a leader, which I think is kind of ridiculous and puts a lot of pressure on the people, because some people are not geared to be leaders. You're just geared to go in there, get what you have to do, and get out. Some people really embrace that. Others, though, it does seem like a misleading thing that if you go in, you're going to be a leader, and to be a leader, you have to finish. That's not necessarily true. You got a lot of leaders out there that call themselves leaders in communities, and they're obviously not, you know. But they get to walk around with the title.
Not with that definition and that certain, within right. that frame.
Yeah, you see, so it's a good slogan. It's something to build towards, but I think just stay in there. And for those kids and those guys, those people, those grown-ups in post-secondary, no matter what you're doing, you know, things are gonna happen, you know, and you have no control of those things. It's never gonna be in there for 4 years and you're out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things are gonna come up, and just try to be ready as best you can.
Or you're gonna be like me, and you'll end up doing for me 5 years, and then you'll never leave. But I really like what you said about the expectation of being a leader, and I think there's a lot more to it. And I think if you think about our communities and our constant, I feel like, for me personally, I just feel like we're constantly fighting and we're struggling, and I think it's kind of our unintentional way of making our fight stronger and our voices louder as a nation of people. And I had asked a question to a chief, actually, this past week, and I said, why are all of our role models politicians? All of our role models, when we bring role models to our communities and talk to our conferences to meet with our students, they're Perry Bellegard, they're Sean Atleo, they're Elijah Harper and Ovid McCurdy, like, they're always politicians. And why is that? And he couldn't answer me. He didn't know, but I think it's because that's that's where our struggle, right? Our struggle and our fight and our voice, and that's what we've been fighting for so long. So that's kind of where we focus most of our energies as people and as a group.
Mm-hmm. Now, Misty, you mentioned that you feel like you are struggling and in that nature. Do you think that's fair that you have these kind of feelings, or do you think a vast majority of students or Aboriginal people do?
Oh, I don't want to speak for everybody. I feel like a lot of our focus and a lot of our energy, especially in Saskatchewan, I think we have been unofficially dubbed one of the most racist provinces in our country, and I feel like we don't have a choice. Mm-hmm. I think when you want to be accepted, like a normal human nature is to be accepted, and that's kind of resistance, and there's so much resistance to it, it just kind of becomes your struggle unintentionally. And I don't know if it was intended on my family or my friends or my community to make me feel this way, but I think as a person who values their identity and their community and their culture and their family and their friends, it just kind of happens.
Yeah. So getting back to the education, particularly in high school, why do you think like these populations just aren't doing as well with other groups of populations in Saskatchewan?
Oh, what a great question.
Well, I don't know about Saskatchewan.
We have an hour, right?
I did high school. I was on like the 6-year program in high school. So I actually got in university as a mature student. But I think I did grade 10 English like three times. At the very least. And I hated it. I hated all the reading and all the junk and the garbage attributed to it. Then I go into McMaster, and everyone was telling me, you have to take an English to learn how to write papers correctly. I never listened to them. I went ahead, and this is sort of why I failed out of McMaster. I did well in my studio practice, but I fell behind in the art history. I didn't learn how to write properly. But then at the same time, in another class, I wrote an A paper. I came to FNU and I took the first year English and the Wascana anthology. There was a lot of writings in there by Indian writers. And mm-hmm. I was actually able to open that book and relate directly to what was happening in that book. This stuff, I said to myself, if this was available to me in grade 10, I would have buzzed through that year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that related, having that ability to relate as a person and identify with what you're learning and understanding is really important. And I think the federal schools, right, we don't have a set curriculum. It's not like the provincial schools where you learn this throughout this year from this time to this time in this course and this course, and this is what you learn within the courses. So if a student and it's very obvious that First Nations people are very nomadic, if a student leaves, say, Papikasis and moves and goes over to OCHAP, there's no guarantee that what they just finished learning in that one class in that one semester at that one school is going to be able to just transfer directly into and efficiently into the whatever they're learning in that class mm-hmm. on OCHAP, because it'll be completely different.
To add to that, I met a lady who had to give up her house on her reserve. She had been living there a long time, but once she had to move, she would have to move to go to Regina. She would lose that house because everything's band owned, mm-hmm. which is another very big different thing from out here in Six Nations. So she whoever came into that house was next in line on a list. And so if things didn't fall through for her and go well in school in Regina, you know, how would she be back home? Mm-hmm. So why should she leave? So she would be facing struggles.
She'd be put on that wait list too.
Facing more struggles in the city and different ones.
And scarier ones and unknown, right? By yourself with no support systems.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's those struggles happen far beyond. I was an Aboriginal recruiter for the U of R for about a year and a half, and our biggest thing was I would see students from Sandy Bay and Pelican Narrows, even down to Pieblots, and their enrollment numbers are significantly high in grade 10. And then when I come there to talk with our grade 12s, less than a third of them are still there.
What was our height?
That it's grade 10 is where they stop. That's where you have to catch them. And there's so many things going on there that even when you're recruiting, you're still missing a large group of them already. They're already gone. You've missed them.
Yeah. So in the future, how do you feel the outcomes are going to change? Do you think things are going to get better?
I think so. I believe so.
Hope so.
No, I believe no, so. They're going to. They have
to. They have to. Everything gets better with knowledge and understanding.
And the more people that
and education.
And the more people that push on through, you know, without, and probably realizing a lot of the blame comes on the self.
Yeah.
You know, you can't keep blaming Whitey for everything, right?
No, you can't blame on the politicians for everything.
You can't blame a lot of things. You know, it's a very internal thing, and the adversities that are faced by First Nations people, they are different, and everyone is, I'm sure, is aware of it. But there's a whole newcomer population, you know, and where English is a second language, and just imagine what it's like coming from another country, and you're going into grade 6 or you're going into grade 10, you know, just imagine those. What that is like, and so it's things aren't, you know, red and white anymore. You know, it's there's all kinds of issues,
and people,
and levels of government legislation that have to be pushed through and adhered to and observed and maintained.
Okay.
Alrighty, well. I think we'll take our break just a little bit early. We're just about at the bottom of the hour there, and we've got some Michael Franti queued up for the after the break. So we'll do our break right now, and we'll continue our discussion after Michael Franti.
In the morning, all I do is pray for some guidance and protection on the streets today, and an answer to the questions I ask every day. So tell me, why did the birds that used to fly here, tell me, why do they come to die here, and all the kids that used to run here, tell me, why did they load their guns here? I remember in the days when we were one heart, no need to defend. I just wrap my arms around you, don't give up, this song is for you. Hey, 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 no matter how life is today, there's just one standing all in a row. There's a crack in the gutter where a flower grows. Reminding me that everything is possible. Yeah, reminding me that nothing is impossible. You gotta live for the one that you love, you know. You gotta love for the life that you live, you know. Singing hey, 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 no matter how life is today, there's just one thing that I got to say. I want to let another moment slip away. Nobody ever tell you that it couldn't be done. Don't let nobody ever tell you that we couldn't be one. Don't let nobody ever tell you that it shouldn't be sung. Don't let nobody ever tell you you're the only one. Singing hey, 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 hey. No matter how life is today, there's just one thing that I got to say. I won't let another moment slip away. I say hey, hey, hey. No matter how life is today, there's just one thing that I got to say. I won't let another this is
So to remind our audience, we're here sitting today with Adam Martin. He's a fine arts, well, he was a fine arts student with the First Nations University of Canada. And we're also sitting with Misty Longman. She's the Aboriginal Student Center Manager at the University of Regina. So, Misty, can you tell us a bit about the history of the Aboriginal Student Center?
Yes. Well, College West was predominantly the center of Indigenous education on campus, because that's where SIFC, the Federated College, had been for a number of years before we had progressed into First Nations University of Canada, and they had their own building. So for a number of years, College West was SIFC and was where we would gather as a community of students. And so once they left and created First Nations University of Canada in 2003, we realized on campus there was a need for the University of Regina itself to maintain Aboriginal education and supports for students. So in 2006, they used the same student lounge that they had for SIFC, actually, and created the University of Regina's Aboriginal Student Center. Okay. So we've been running since 2006.
I don't understand, you're in the middle of a new expansion.
We are, yes.
Why the need for more space?
The need for more space, because the need for more space, we have so many students. As a university, we now have 13,000 students on our campus, but our Aboriginal student population is growing significantly, and we do have the highest population of Aboriginal students than any other post-secondary institution in our province. Oh. So there's a definite need for supports for these students and to retain these students that are coming in more rapidly than ever before.
Mm-hmm. So why is the center important for Aboriginal students?
Everybody needs a place to call home, and I like I mentioned earlier, I grew up with educators. The university was my home, and a lot of our students come here from other places, and they need a home, and they need a center, and they need family and support and community, and that's what we offer. And that's why it's important, because, like Adam said, he had culture shock. Mm-hmm. It's a very different place. And from he came from Ontario. Our students that even just leave Pipots and come to the city to live here and not commute back and forth, it's a culture shock. It's a difference. So having that center and that location and that place that understands you and knows you before you even walk in the door is assuring and welcoming and comforting and just a great thing to feel.
Mm-hmm. So why do you think that there is, like, this culture shock? Like, is it relatively something, like, is it a big issue to deal with? Like,
absolutely. Absolutely, especially when you're a young person and you don't even know how to identify yourself to yourself, and you don't know who you are because you're in that transition of understanding yourself, and then you come into a larger center. I have cousins who are from the LaRonde area, and when my cousin came down to go to university, my cousin Jody, she was terrified to drive in the big city.
Uh-huh.
You know, even just that is a big difference for people, and the bus systems. And I've brought in students from Wollaston Lake and a lot of other northern communities, and whenever they get on campus, the first thing they say is it reminds them of a shopping mall because it's so big.
For me, there was everything. I started to realize that there was different, the humor was really different.
Yeah.
That's, you know, just the ways, like, you know, there's slang. University is a really cliquey environment as well. And, you know, to begin with, right? And so when you have a place to go to that helps that adjustment, but yeah, the culture shock, I thought Indians were Indians, but there's so many differences. And then getting to know people from different communities within Saskatchewan, you know, there's 75, right?
I thought there were 74 one.
74 represented by FSIN. Yeah.
Yes.
And then, you know, they're all very different. There's five different language groups, I think, represented.
Predominantly.
Yeah, and to
and then dialects within those.
To wade into that as a Mohawk from southern Ontario, you know, mm-hmm. a densely populated area of the country, you know, yeah, it's huge to have spaces like that. For sure.
So what's the mandate of the Aboriginal Student Center? Like, why exactly is it there?
Well, to put it simply, we are here to empower, engage, and educate Aboriginal students. We're here to be a place for Aboriginal students socially, academically, and culturally to provide those needs that Aboriginal students need when they're in university, mm-hmm. and to support those needs.
So what kind of services is the center providing for students?
Well, we do consistent programming. We have employer luncheons to do that career focus for our students. We have we work in collaboration with many departments. We have a lot of really great supports across our campus for all students, and we bring them into our center. So we bring in the Women's Center. We bring in harassment and discrimination and respectful environment place workshops. Safe Talk came in and worked with our students and certified a lot of our students as well on a weekend. But then we also have those cultural components where we're doing something with a partnership with the Faculty of Kinesiology on the 29th. It's actually a public event, so the community is welcome to come, and it's an introduction to powwow.
Okay.
So it'll explain all the different dances, especially chicken dance, which is my favorite. And we don't have a cultural advisor or an elder, as some call them, quite yet, because we're in that awful transition of moving, and our place is just hectic, and that's just not an appropriate space right now. But in our short-term future, we will have a culture advisor who can be there as a support and a guider for students, too, as well, to give them that component. But I think, ultimately, it's just a place where our students gather. We have a lot of wonderful students who come into the center on a regular basis, and they just kind of created their own family. All on their own, they go to movies together, they have Halloween parties together, they study together, they laugh together, and they cry together, and they do that all in this little space, this little tiny classroom in College West. And I think that's kind of our mandate, is to support that and to encourage that and help that grow.
Mm. So one program that I thought was particularly interesting, and I'm not sure if they do it with other groups in the university, but it's called the Student Success Program?
Yes.
How has this program been beneficial?
Well, okay, so a little bit of context is it's the Nito Chipo Menoma Student Success Program, which is Soto Furuir here, and it's a learning cohort for first-year Aboriginal students. We do also have students who have been in the program that have been RTD'd or requested to dismiss in the past that have wanted to take back on the challenges of university. Campion does have that. They have a learning community, but ours is focused on Aboriginal students, and it's a recruitment transition program because we noticed that from first year to second year, Aboriginal students at the U of R had a 42% transition retention rate. So that's dismal and that's disappointing, and we knew that there was a need to make sure that when our students get here in their first year, they're going to stay in their second year. So this program is it takes in a group of students that are coming from all different areas, all different nations, Métis, Inuit, you name it, they're all there, and they all work together, and they take three classes together in both semesters of their first year, and they have a student success facilitator.
Okay.
And she goes to classes with them, and she has sessions before and after classes with them, and it's a free program, and these students get preference for scholarships, and they get hands-on learning with that facilitator, those tutors, they get the Career Center gets that one-on-one with them right away. So it's a program to make sure that they stay and they understand that the importance of their education, and that if they don't want to fail, we have everything there so that they can succeed.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned a few of the activities and events that you draw into your center. Are these activities been received well by the students?
I think so, yeah. We've kind of gone into a bit of a transition. Everybody who works in the center is fairly new, and our senior employee has been here since September of 2011. So we, as a department, have changed so much in the last year, and we're just trying to figure out who we are as a department and as a team. So we've really relied heavily on people outside of our center to provide supports and connections in that. And actually, if you look at the logo for the Aboriginal Student Center on campus, it is the Cree syllabics for university, which Cree is a very descriptive language, and it's the word actually in Roman, how do you say that word? Anthography? I can't say it. But I hope you know what I mean anyways. But a breakdown is, it's a large building where people gather, but the important part is it's a reciprocal process and everybody works together, and that's kind of the understanding of what university is in the Cree language. And so we've really took that upon ourselves to branch out and to work with other people, and we've noticed that we've started bringing in other communities on campus and outside of campus, that the students are coming, and different students that have never walked in our doors before are coming, and we're seeing a lot of growth and a lot of even initiation on their part. I'm voicing what they think they need and what they would want to see, too, is coming up very candidly and all on their own and with very little encouragement from us. So I think what we're doing is going well so far. I would like them to tell me if that's not the case.
So how do you measure the effectiveness of these programs? Do you ask the students afterwards if it was beneficial to them?
With the OMA program, we do track them. We watch them and see how they're going in their program, because right now the OMA, the Student Success Program that we talked about earlier, is in its third year. So our third cohort is going in right now, and they're fantastic, wonderful people, and I love watching them grow in their first year. But what we do is when we have bigger events, we have an orientation for Aboriginal students at the beginning of the fall semesters primarily, but we also have a smaller version of that in the winter, and we provide surveys to those students. And there's the incentives, you know, if you fill out the survey online, and same with our Safe Talk. Our bigger events, we will send out surveys and kind of track and get response and feedback that way. With our smaller things, I think it's just a lot of asking people what they thought. And because we are still a small community on campus, we still get that one-to-one conversations often with our students, and okay. Like I mentioned, they very much voice their opinions, especially now.
So is the amount of people who are using the Aboriginal Center, is that growing? Or?
Yes. I think we track our numbers of when students come in the center, so I guess that's another thing we do track, is how many they come in per day, and we can see on average a day between 50 and 60 students coming into the center. And again, with bringing all the different departments, and we're bringing in a lot of non-First Nations students as well, they're taking part in our smaller versions of the student success workshops, note-taking, time management, study skills sessions. They're coming into those, and we're working a lot more closely with SUNTEP than we ever have before, which is the Saskatchewan Urban Native Teaching Education Program, and their students are coming down, and they're getting involved in eating pizza and things like that. So it's interesting to see them all growing together and coming into our doors and filling up our space. And it's a very small space. It's actually just one classroom. So we have three office spaces and a lounge space and a computer area for our students. So when you have 50 of them in there and they're singing and dancing and laughing and gossiping and studying and reading and writing and going on Facebook and playing YouTube videos, and then you have the staff working, it gets really crazy.
Yeah. An atmosphere like that definitely would motivate and encourage you to, you know, stay in school, like, because you've got this, like...
You have a support system.
Yeah, you have that support system, because, you know, you're not alone anymore.
Exactly. Our OMA group, they're quite interesting. They're a wonderful group. They actually started planning their own social events outside of classes together. They go bowling together. Mm-hmm. And so they've done that all on their own, and they've created that family. And although those students are in the program, so if they're not there, that facilitator's there to support them to make sure they get their notes and stuff, but they all kind of are starting to do that on their own. They'll talk before class and say, you know, I'm not attending today. My son is sick. Can you get the notes for me? And they're all doing that. And they're creating those networks just by being in that space together.
Mm-hmm. So with your programming, do you encourage or include non-Aboriginal students, or students from a variety of backgrounds if they were interested?
Absolutely. We encourage our community. That's kind of what we're there for. We're ultimately, I like to explain it, and I could be wrong and someone might come back and tell me otherwise, but I think we're a student support center with an Aboriginal component, a cultural component.
Mm-hmm.
And we very much welcome in a lot of other people and of different backgrounds and experiences to come in, and we actually encourage that. We don't want our Aboriginal students to be segregated by any means. That's the last thing you want to do, especially in an educational institution, right? So the more that you bring everyone together, the bigger your community grows.
Yeah.
So if we have non-First Nations students who actually listen, I would love for them to come in more and say hello too. We always have food.
Yeah.
That's a great way to get students, food.
I'll be there.
Yeah, see?
So now we kind of lost Adam here. He had to step away, so it's just me and Misty here now.
And the background people.
Yeah, and the background people. So Misty, like the First Nations University in Canada, the University of Regina, they're both separated by, you know, distance. They're in different buildings and stuff like that. Are there programs at the First Nations University that are similar to what's going on with the Student Center?
I love this question. Oh my, I'm going to sit up. Okay. So, the way that I like explaining this to people is the University of Regina is the main campus, and we have three federated colleges, and First Nations University of Canada is a federated college within the U of R. A lot of people, and even First Nations people, don't know that there really isn't that much of a difference between FNU and the U of R in the sense that you still get a U of R degree. I think people don't even know that, right? You still get a U of R degree, but you have a community on campus. It's very much like Campion or Luther, right? They have specific communities that they are there to support, but you don't have to be part of those communities to go to those colleges, and that's the same with First Nations University. So I think a lot of people think that there's a divide, but there isn't. We work together as a whole campus to support all students, right? All of our federated colleges as well as the main campus do. So First Nations has that, First Nations University of Canada, or FNUNIV, has that community there for students, and they have that cultural component in their studies. So if you wanted to be any student of any walk of life and take a science course from FNU, you can actually go to a science class and they'll teach you practices and protocols of First Nations people. So if you were to cut a plant, you would know how to cut it appropriately so it could grow back, or how to leave tobacco in exchange for taking something from the earth. They provide you with those kinds of backgrounds, and they instill that in their learning, in their education, in their center, in their practices, and their mandates. And so what we do at the Aboriginal Student Center is we support students who may not be FNUNIV students and who are FNUNIV students. There are going to be students who can't be a First Nations University of Canada student because they're in engineering, or they're in the education program, the arts education program that FNU doesn't have. So what it is we're trying to make sure that all students are getting the supports they need from as many people as possible, from as many departments, as many areas, okay, to make sure that they're successful. So we are very lucky that we have First Nations University of Canada on our campus, because it's my home. It's where I went to school. I'm an alumni. My family's been a part of that institution for a number of years. But it's also great that you have other people working with you in a giant, bigger version of a community to make sure that these supports are out there for every student.
So are some of these students taking classes at both the University of Regina and on the First Nations campus?
Absolutely. Absolutely they are. A lot of students are interchanging courses. I think when some students, when they come on campus, they don't know that you can go through federated colleges, any of them, to take courses, and then they kind of finally figure that out. But our OMA program, they have a student success program as well at FNUNIV for first-year students. I won't speak on it because I'm not fluent in it by any means, but they also have that, and they also have all of their programmings and things that take place, and we do our best to communicate those to the students who we see often too, because we have kind of a captive audience, a very specific group of people who come in regularly, and we like to inform them as well. And their student associations are also sit on the Indigenous Student Association at the U of R as well as FNU. So there's a lot of interchanging that takes place, and I think that's wonderful, and that's why we're all here.
Mm-hmm. So do you think a time will come where the Aboriginal Student Center, won't be needed, there won't be a need for it anymore? Or do you think there will always be an interest in this kind of center?
There will always be this kind of need for a center for Aboriginal people, and I think there's going to be, you're going to see a lot more, what he did mention with immigration taking place, you're going to notice more centers coming up for other groups of people, I hope. In the future, I think we need to be, We're a place of education, of gaining more knowledge, so we want to make sure that we are providing that for all groups of people, and we're accepting of all groups of people and supporting all groups of people in all of their struggles to learn. So I think not only will you see Aboriginal Student Centers, but you'll see student centers for other groups of students who are on campus that have different struggles and needs that need to be met and accommodated to be successful in an educational institution.
Mm-hmm. So how do you see the Student Center evolving in the future, in the next 10, 15 years?
My dream? Oh, I have a dream. Don't we all have a dream? We would have our own little, our own little building, or a floor of a building, and we're there, and we have so many students that are successful that are utilizing our centers and supports, and we just keep growing. That's kind of what I think is going to happen, and I hope that as an institution, we are committed and we plan to grow with our students and become this wonderful center where we all educate and learn together through different aspects and environments and experiences from all different groups of people.
Mm-hmm. So do you believe the university, the Aboriginal Student Center has, like, changed the outcome in some of these students? Like, without this center, do you think they're, like, perhaps they might have, you know, dropped out of university or, you know, felt discouraged and that would affect their grades or...
I've had friends say that. I've had people in the community say that. Or if we speak about a program that we now have that we didn't have before, and they said, I wish that was there when I was in university, that might have helped me through my struggles. I've gotten a lot of that, and I think some of our students may say that, but I haven't asked them very often kind of how they felt about that, and that's my hope. That's my hope, and that's the reason why I do what I do, is for that very reason.
Mm-hmm. So... can you tell me a little bit about some of the events that are coming up at the Student Center?
The program coordinator, she's fantastic. Her name's Rachel Janzi. She always has something coming up. November 29th is a public event, so I'll discuss that one with you guys, and that is the introduction to Powwow. So we are going to bring in the different types of dances and students or people in our community that will be coming. We'll have regalia, and they will be in discussing that for our community. That is a collaboration with the Faculty of Kin. They usually host this each semester, so we've been working with them for a little while to have this on. So that's a big one that we're talking about. And we're going to have our new space hopefully by the end of the academic semester, or I guess the fall semester here. So that's another big thing that's taking place for us. But right now what we do is we focus on our students that are there. Mm-hmm. We make sure that we've got just that consistent programming. Those student success workshops are happening really close because finals are coming up soon, right? So we want those in there. We have that tutoring and that one-on-one tutoring for our students right now, because now midterms are over and those papers are due. And just that little support that you need and those little pushes that you need is what we're focusing on right now. Okay. With our students that are coming in or need to come in, and we're trying to find them and bring them in.
So this powwow, you said it was open to the public?
Yes.
If people were interested in going out to this, where would they go?
They would go to Gym 3 on November 29th at 11:30? But it is on our website. And the great thing is we just launched the Aboriginal Student Center website within the U of R website, and people can RSS feed or subscribe, so they know the events that are taking place. I'm not tech savvy or computer internet savvy yet, so hopefully that translates.
So past the powwow, there's probably going to be other events that will come up.
It's not a powwow, it's just an introduction.
Just
an explanation of the dances.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the big one that's coming up on the 29th.
Okay.
So I hope people aren't going to come and try and register and dance, because that's not what's happening at all.
Sorry, it's an introduction.
Yeah, an explanation.
So, But past this event, like, there will be other events that will be available?
Yeah, absolutely. We do an NAD event every year as well, and we're working with all of the other departments on campus, and we now have an Aboriginal Advisory Circle, too, who's working on creating stuff as well for the whole campus, because we have taken the initiative to indigenize our entire institution. So you'll see a lot of interesting things taking place on our campus and within our center in the next year.
Mm-hmm. So one more event was the Louis Riel Day that's coming up.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's just a small one. Well, we have Russell Fayant. He works in SunTep, and he's coming down to speak about Louis Riel on November 16th in the center. So we're just going to have that in the center, and anyone who walks by or plans to come is more than welcome to come sit in and listen to him talk. He's a fantastic guy, and he's got a lot of great knowledge that he can contribute to this kind of thing.
Yeah, the Louis Riel Day was his... I guess his execution was here in Regina.
Yep.
And that's Victoria coming up Park. Here at the end of November, right?
Yep. No, well, November 16th is Louis Riel Day.
Oh, so it's coinciding, that's the day?
Yeah, the day of is the celebration of. And then we'll work with Russell Fayant in the future to come down and speak specifically about Métis settlements. Mike Burton is a master's student on campus. He'll be in on the 15th to talk about his thesis on... oppression and racism within the provisions of the Indian Act, too.
Right.
So we have lots of students coming in and talking about things, always.
Right on. Thanks a lot, Misty.
No problem.
Well, this has been great. I'd like to thank Misty for being here, and Derek, you've done a wonderful job here, and it was great having Adam here as well.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful discussion. And we're closing up this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, and we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. For information on past and upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to amnestysaskatchewan.ca. I'd just like to remind you that every Tuesday at 7 p.m., Amnesty letter writing happens at Atlantis Coffee, Victoria Avenue and Hamilton Street. Several Amnesty members will be present, writing current Amnesty International appeals, so please feel welcome to join them for some letter writing. And also, I'd like you to watch out for what's happening on December 9th. We're going to be celebrating the United Nations Universal Declaration on Human Rights, and that'll happen on December 9th at the Artful Dodger. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said it's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness.